Ryan Vandenbush joins us. Ryan, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Hey, we appreciate you coming on. Let's get into you and Strutty had a kind of a love-hate relationship early before you guys became teammates.
It was always love with Strutty. We loved tangling with each other.
You know what is funny? Like, I don't remember why it started, but every time we played, we just had a fight. I don't know. Like, I don't remember being mad at you or anything. It was just it was just the weirdest thing. Like, hey, this is going to happen, and we just do it.
Right. We had to justify what we did on the ice, I guess, or our roles. Maybe, I don't know. But it was, we seemed to always get tangled up. It's funny. And we ended up being buddies on the same team. It's kind of neat. Nice to hear from you, Strutty.
That's good to talk to you. You know, and Bushy, when I think back all the guys I played with, you were one of the guys that I loved. And, we played similar type of games and very hard-known games. But, you know, you were a guy that you just kept moving forward. And, you know, other people had dropped off, and you just kept moving forward. You're working on, getting stronger, obviously, in the fighting. But then also the skills, and you became a good player. And, what was that like, that transition from junior now into the minors, where you had to realize kind of this is what I'm going to have to do to kind of push my way or bully my way into the NHL?
Yeah, like growing up in minor hockey, I was always a pretty decent skater and a forechecker, and I wasn't ever much of a goal scorer, but I got my fair share of goals. And then playing junior B as a 16-year-old, when I skated, I always finished my checks. I was always told to finish your checks, right? And that's what you did. You listen to your coach and you finish your checks. And guys didn't like that. And then they'd come after me and want to drop the gloves, and I didn't back down. So I kind of honed in on my skills a little bit as a 16-year-old playing junior B against these 20-year-olds. And then I still didn't realize I could fight. It was more about, playing hard and being on the power, penalty killer, took a lot of penalties. And then it wasn't until I went to junior, that's where Mark Crawford was a coach there. I think you had Crow, didn't you?
I like him now.
Yeah. Crow's awesome. You know what? I give credit to Crow big time for, he really worked with me and told me things to do off the ice and helped me mentally. So he was great. But, he saw the potential and what kind of player I'd be. I was kind of pegged to be one of those Kirk Maltby, Mike Keane type players, but I never really turned out that way.
And it is tough. It is tough, to go that way. I mean, it is tough, but you got going yourself. And I remember playing you guys in Binghamton. And I think that Binghamton Rangers team in the NHL has to be one of the toughest teams that's ever walked on this earth.
There's a lot of meat down there. There's no doubt about that. I had a lot of fun down in Bingo. Like, but I had way more fun in New York.
Well, there was like Sylvain Blouin, Ryan Vandenbush. You had Eric Bolton.
Pete Fiorentino.
Yeah.
That
like,
was crazy.
It was a nightmare. I remember just going through warm, like, okay, who am I going to fight? Who's going to beat me up today? Not to mention Eric Cairns. You had Dan Krutche and Net, who was a little crazy himself as a goalie. Like, that was a ridiculous, tough team.
Did you say Sylvain Blouin? Did you say that name too?
Yeah, Sylvain Blouin. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was real tough.
He was crazy.
Yeah. No, it was good. But, so what else is going on in your world? I can't believe you're on radio. I can believe it. You always had that gift of gab, so good for you. How long have you been doing this for?
Well, quite a while, but, it's a compliment for you to say, because I am of much better looking than radio would suggest, right? Like I know that's what you're saying.
Radio.
Hey, Rod, I want to talk. So you were in the minors for 4.5 years, and then you get called up to the New York Rangers. Your first game is December 13th. In Buffalo against the Sabres. So what stood out for you in your first NHL game after battling it out for 4 years in the minors?
Well, I remember that very clearly, like it was yesterday. And yeah, like you said, I was battling out for a while in the minors. It was my fourth year when I finally got the call, and I'll never forget it. Buffalo is just a couple hours away from my home, so we had pretty much a town of Delhi there, the bus. So, the night before, we came in the night before, and what stands out the most is waking up in the morning and feeling sick to my stomach. Like, I was so nervous. And then I was walking into the restaurant to grab something to eat, and who's there sitting by himself? It's Wayne Gretzky. So, so he waves me over to his table, and we sit down, we have breakfast together, and I don't even remember what we talked about. I was just, in awe. And then I remember sitting on the bench, remember, when Wayne Gretzky broke into the league, that was what, late 70s, 78, 79, 79, 80?
Yeah, 79, 80, yep.
So I was like 6 years old. So I grew up watching this guy, him and Messier and all that whole era there. And then, fast forward a number of years later, and now I'm sitting on a bench, the Marine Midland Center in Buffalo, And I look to my left, and there's Messi, and to my right is Gretzky. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? This is like a dream come true. So that was what I remember the most.
Well, yeah, because you had those two. You also had Brian Leach on that team, Luke Robitaille. Like, there's a lot of Hall of Fame players. And then, you know, you come in, and every player is obviously nervous. And you played 11 games with them that season, you know, and then you became more of a regular after that. But was there a moment at all where someone kind of said something that just made you feel comfortable, like, okay, you know what, I belong in the NHL?
Yeah, you know what? My dad knew I was nervous, and he says, you know what, Ryan, just relax. You know, these guys put on their skates the same way as you do. You know, they're not superstars. They're out there in the public more. Just be yourself and work hard, and that's all you got to worry about. And you know what? Advice like that, just it makes things a little easier, and that's what I tell the kids too. Like, coach, go out there and just do your best. I don't care if you win by 10 goals or lose by 10 goals. If you can look at yourself in the mirror after the game and say you did your best, then that's all you can ask for.
Ryan Vandenbush joins us on Storytime, of course, a former NHLer. Now, Ryan, you had a tough stretch there with concussions for a while. I know you're out for almost a full season, but Stretty was telling me that you did a lot of work on nutrition and supplements and stuff and different cannabis treatments, that you're in a lot better place. Can you kind of talk about that journey and how difficult it was? Like, what was the darkest moment maybe for you when you were dealing with concussions?
Well, the toughest moment when I was in the minors trying to battle, that season, 96-97, where I was playing 11 games, so I was up and down with the minors that year. And that was my toughest season with concussions. I didn't miss a lot of games that year because I just didn't, you know, I didn't notify anybody about my concussions. But that year in particular, I had three of them. And one was Stu Grimson gave me a pretty good one, and then a couple down in the minors. And that year was really tough. I don't even know how I got through it because I was just... I scored my first goal in the NHL that year, too. And that same game, I got in a fight with Dan Cork, and he hit me, but it wasn't even that hard. And it was like, that probably was my fourth concussion that year. And I remember thinking on the bus afterwards, I remember being really depressed. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? But it's funny how you look back now, and you have these memories of these things that happen. Like, I remember sometimes, you know, standing on the ice and getting hit so hard where I was thinking of my grade 3 school teacher. It just throws you into a whole other dimension. And, you know, after, you know, looking at all the research that people are doing with the cannabis and all that, I was introduced to cannabis for medical purposes back in 2009. So I retired in 2007, and then 2009, and I got my real estate license, my wife and I started selling real estate. And then I was introduced to cannabis a couple years later for medical purposes, and I started doing a lot of due diligence and seeing what the benefits are. And I you know, Rick Simpson, I Googled his name, and I came across this Rick Simpson oil that my wife ended up using while she had cancer. So I know that oil works. It's really potent. It's a high THC concentrate. And then, so I was using it for medicinal purposes. When I left the game, I was somewhat dependent on opioids. And Stretty, you know damn well, like, Bob Probert was my roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned what not to do from him, but it was tough because, you know, a lot of guys are dealing with some pain, and then these opioids work so well and they're so effective that that's what makes them addictive, but they're not sustainable. So leaving the game, sorry, I'm getting a little bit off track, but I just want to go through my timeline.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Where I'm coming from. So after playing 14 years of hockey, 2 years later into my retirement, I was able to get my license and then finally grow my own medicine. And then after a couple of years from there, I was able to transition off of all opioids. So, you know, leaving the game, I was somewhat dependent on them. And I didn't like where it was going because I saw where it was going with my old roommate, my buddy Bob. So anyways, to speed that up a little bit, I ended up, I bought a farm, a 64-acre farm. And then I applied for my license to Health Canada to cultivate, and I have my hemp license, and we're in Jamaica, and now I'm making medicine, you know, hopefully for the world.
Tom with Ryan Vandenbush, longtime NHLer. And you know, Bush, you talk about that transition off of opioids into what you're the cannabis now. And what did you feel like for your head or maybe state of mind? How did that kind of alter? You talked about, you know, you'd have weird moments in game or post game, but what is the difference you felt, you know, interacting just with your family and your kids there in business people?
Yeah, no, it was. So just to answer your question, post and pre-cannabis world was two different worlds for me. I was a very pre-cannabis world. I was very short and short-tempered and very moody. And then post-cannabis, you know, I felt like I was a little bit more relaxed. As long as you have an intention. And when I say cannabis, I'm talking about hemp.
Right.
Sometimes too, like there's CBD that's non-psychoactive. So, you know, mostly during the day, I take my CBD in the mornings and the evenings, and it helps with my anti-inflammatory and flushes the inflammation out. And then, you know, sometimes I treat cannabis as a cocktail sometimes, you know, in the evenings. So I just find that it relaxes me, study, and then I just have a little bit more laid back and less pain. It's not like it always cures the pain, but it gets my mind off of it. And it gets me doing more yoga and stretching. So, you know, what I've learned since I retired from hockey is what not to do. When I was playing hockey, I had the worst diet in the world and I had the worst habits. And looking back, it just blows me away. So I've made a vow to myself to, you know, eat as healthy as I possibly can right now and treat my body like it should be treated and take care of it because it's the only body you have. And so that's what I do. I just try and stay, I'm very conscious with my health and wellness now, and I feel great.
Ryan, what type of thing, what have you changed mostly in your diet?
Meat. I'm mostly a plant-based, I don't want to say vegetarian, but, you know, I'm not, it's tough. I'm slowly making that transition, but it's the more vegetables and plant-based foods that I eat is making me feel a heck of a lot better. I never realized that. And no dairy for the most part. Again, if I'm out, you know, I don't have a choice, I'll do it. But for the most part, I'm cutting that out of my diet.
And you felt that's allowed your body and your mind to feel better?
100%. Yeah. No, I feel a lot less inflammation, a lot less headaches, stretching out, just taking care of your body.
Did you finally find the six-pack you were searching for while you were playing? Or?
Never lost that six-pack, Freddie. It's a little bit of work.
Yeah. Bushy, I want to take you back to a game and see if you recall this. We were playing Phoenix now, Arizona, and I was you and I were on the team. We played together in Chicago. We had a pretty tough team. And Phoenix had Darcy Hordichuk had just come in. I think you'd hurt your hand a couple games before. And so I remember before the game, you lean over, he's like, Stratty, just so you know, my hand's a little sore. I don't want to have to fight. So I'm like, no problem. I knew Hordichuk wanted to fight. So we go out there at some point during the game.
That's what I said to you, that I didn't want to?
Yeah. Just because your hand was sore. Like, it wasn't like,
okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so anyway, so this is how I remembered. I wonder if you remembered at all this way. And so we go out there for a shift. I remember it's a defensive zone faceoff. And Hordichuk looks at you and starts yelling at you. So I push you aside. I'm like, Bushy, I got this one. And you're like, okay. Like, it wasn't like I was being a hero. I was just like helping a guy out. So I fight Hordichuk. And whatever, like I go to the penalty box. I'm like, okay, good. I help my buddy out. Like, we don't have to worry about it. Well, they send out that big Russian. What was that guy's name? I can't think of him now. Oh, Nazarov. Nazarov goes out there. And so he fights. So he wants to fight Bushy. So Bushy fights him. So he comes to the bench. I don't know if you remember. I'm like yelling at you, telling you, I told you not to fight. Your hand is sore. And like, you're like, buddy, I just fought him. Like, I don't care. Don't fight. Like, it was so funny. Like, do you remember that? Because I remember I was really upset with you. And we had just fought, and now I wanted to fight you because I was so mad that you filed a sore hand.
You're the best teammate, Freddie. You're awesome.
It was so funny, but that was kind of the way things were, right? Like, there were so many different guys that you'd want to fight all the time. It was sometimes hard to keep track.
Oh, totally. This one time we were in San Jose, and Norny Mulligan was our coach. I don't think you were there yet. And we got our asses kicked the first regular season game. We had this big seance the night before, and we all got chains to wear and all that. And we get out, and we lost like 10-1. It's stupid. So the next time we were in San Jose, we had a pregame skate. And the first thing that Lorne says after the end of the pregame skate, he says, Bushy, you take Grant Marshall, you beat the shit out of him. Proby, you got this guy, you beat the shit out of him. You got Brownie, you got this guy. And I remember saying to Proby after, too, I'm like, I know Grant. I played with him. He's a really good guy. I'd rather take Brant Myers than you take Grant Marshall, okay? But then we negotiate.
Yeah, it's so true, though. It's so crazy. Now these days, guys, it's changed so much. But, I mean, when you look at the game now, the way the guys skate and are so – they're just – I think the skills, you know, is similar at the top end, but it's just that it runs through four lines now.
Well, it's so fast. You know, take it to that red line. You guys are like the game's at the peak right now with speed and two guys crashing through that neutral zone. You better keep your head up, boy. Ooh. You know, a lot of people talk about tough guys with the getting concussions, but these guys that are playing 20, 25, 27 minutes a game, they're taking a beating too. So it's very important they take care of their bodies now. And, you know, can you imagine what we know now, if we knew now what we didn't know then, man, holy cow, we'd be still be playing, eh, Strutty?
I would have worked on my skill a little more.
Ryan Vandenbosch. Ryan, we got to take a quick break. Do you mind sticking around? We got a few other questions we want to ask in the second segment. You okay with that?
No problem.
At this time, on the line. Ryan, we talked about your first NHL game, which was in Buffalo, but do you remember your first NHL goal?
Yes, I do.
Your first year, kind of take me through the story of your first goal against the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, we were in Philly, and it's coming through the neutral zone. It was a pass from Bruce Driver up to Mike Eastwood, and then Mike Eastwood passed it to me, and I came in off my off wing, and I shot it just over the blue line as I kept my feet moving and shot it through the D's legs and went short side on Hextall, of all people. And then, that was my first goal. I bought Dan Kordick 5 minutes after that.
I was just going to say, I was like, okay, I got my first goal. I'm so jacked up. Now I got to have another fight.
That's right.
Away you go.
I was looking for that assist. I couldn't find that assist, so
oh,
damn.
Yeah.
Would you, like, I watch players now, and it doesn't matter. When a guy scores his first NHL goal, every player gets pretty jacked up about it because they all remember, you know, you can go in great detail this many years later, your first goal. What did the guys say to you on the bench or at intermission? Because you guys were leading 2-0 after the first period, and you had scored the first goal.
It was awesome. I remember a fist pump from Gretz, you know, all the guys. It was, like, it was really cool. Then someone grabbed my puck, and then a week later I had it on a plaque. And it showed the time of the goal and who assisted on it. And yeah, it was pretty neat.
Where's the puck now?
It's in my basement, yeah. I got the old workout room there still that haven't been down yet since I played, but it's still there. Well, I should say that. I go down there to stretch and do yoga. I work out completely different than I used to.
Yeah, not as much bench press. You used to live on the bench press machine. Well, it was nice to warm it up.
The way we trained back then, it's like you're training for the beach or something stupid like that. But, yeah.
No, we were definitely full-chested athletes. There's no doubt about it.
Strutty and I were always doing bench press and curls for the girls after the game day.
It was exactly it.
It's funny. You talked about it last segment, Ryan, how if you knew then what you knew now, just you know, how your body would feel a lot different because – you know, bench press, sure, it got you stronger, but it really limited a lot of the other potential of what you could do and what you should be doing for hockey.
Oh, 100%. You're tightening up your muscles. You want to elongate your muscles and stretch them out, and you're going to be less injury prone as well. So, yeah, we were doing it the wrong way, or I was anyways. But near the end of the career, I'll never forget how, like, I always prided myself, because I was a fourth, fifth liner, I always prided myself on being in the best shape coming to training camp because they were not going to cut me because I was going to be out of shape. They're going to cut me because they just, you know, I didn't have the talent or whatnot. So I remember coming to training camp and I remember seeing this kid, Sidney Crosby, and I remember his work ethic. I was like, mother f- this guy is fast and he works like a machine. So he was doing this pregame warm-up where he does all these plyos and quick feet drills. And I was watching him and I'm like, I just did like, 2 minutes of skipping and then some stretching is basically all I did, right? And I'm like, what's this guy doing? So I said, one game I jumped in with him. I quit halfway through because I was getting tired and I don't want to be tired for the game. This guy plays 27 minutes a game. I was lucky to play two minutes a game. And his, so basically, in a nutshell, back then, this is how it evolved. His pregame warm up was tougher than my postgame workout.
Yeah, those guys were so. I mean, he set the bar really high. There's no doubt about it. It was ridiculous. Yeah. Ryan Vandenbosch joined us, a longtime NHLer. Bushy, when you look at when your good friends, unfortunately passed away much too soon, but Bob Probert and teammate, I think he's misunderstood. Maybe talk to us about what Bob Probert is like away from the ice and where we saw him with those shark-like eyes that showed no emotion.
Yeah, well, there is no doubt Proby was, he was an amazing man, number one. He was an amazing dad, too. You know, I saw it, I witnessed it, you know, being over at his place a number of times and in the summers, taking his kids on a boat and all that kind of stuff.
But, you know, always in the rink during the playing days, you know, he had his demons on his shoulders too. Like, he's, you know, he was, when he was under contract with Chicago, he had in his contract where he couldn't drink or do alcohol, and he was doing really well. And, to be honest with you, like, Proby would give you the shirt off his back. He would never in a million years believe that he was a tough guy if he didn't know that he played hockey. He was just a down-to-earth, sweethearted guy overall. And, you know, when we came into to play Detroit, he always made a point of wanting to go see his mom in Windsor. So him and I would jump in a cab and we'd go through the border and we'd go eat at the, I don't know, the famous place there. He always wanted to take us to eat. And then we'd go, and then we'd bring his mom some food and we'd sit up and we'd visit with her for the evening. And I just remember he was very sweet to his mom.
I want to talk to you a little bit about a program you're involved with, along with Riley Cote, and bringing to Canada's athletes for care. And what is this all about, and what is it for what does it mean for potentially for players or for athletes and humans in Canada?
Yeah, Athletes for Care is a not-for-profit foundation that was founded in the U.S. by athletes for athletes. Riley Cote, remember him? You probably fought him.
I did. Yeah, yeah.
He's... Yeah. So he was one of the co-founders for that. And a number of years ago, I've been kind of following him a little bit, and he was very vocal about alternative medicine. And we were on the same page, and I had no idea what he was up to. So it kind of intrigued me because I actually played against him and fought him as well. So I reached out to him one day, and I said, listen, you know, you guys don't have an Athletes for Care in Canada, and this is what I'm doing. I'm building my own operation type thing. And he says... Let's team up and get this thing in Canada. So I got my company, New Leaf Canada, to be the founding sponsor of Athletes for Care and bring it to Canada. So now we're just kind of, as we build our company and our business, we're going to build Athletes for Care with us. And you asked the question, what does that mean for former players? Well, we've got about 200 players that have registered for Athletes for Care right now to date. You know, whether they're hockey players, football players, MMA guys, baseball, you name it. What we want to do is create one voice and educate, advocate alternative medicines to our former athletes. And it's not just about the athletes. I mean, people in general that have, you know, are older, like our parents, or that have slipped and fell or been in car accidents. There's a lot of people that are suffering out there. And we want to let them know that there's alternative medicine, there's plant-based medicine that we can use that's more effective than the synthetic opioids that's, you know, devastating our country.
And Ryan, you got involved with this strictly because of your own personal challenges, right? You mentioned you'd struggled a little bit with opioids when you left the NHL and no longer. You bought your own farm, and you know you weren't just somebody who, you kind of live it, right? Like, so you've educated yourself on this fact, and you seem like you're just in a much better place health wise and mental wise now than you ever were near the end of your playing career.
Well, you can never stop learning, and after the game, I had to transition into something else, and it was real estate. And shortly after that, it was cannabis, and I've been full bore on that while doing real estate. But I'm a big believer in the plant, and I never realized, you know, all those healing properties that I had within. And now, with, you know, the way technology is, you can extract these medicines coming out of the plant and zero in on certain things and certain terpenes and cannabinoids that are good for your body. So you could get your DNA tested, and you could. Your DNA will tell you what terpene profiles are best for your body, genetic makeup, because some of it may not be good for you. Some of it make you jittery and paranoid. Some of it's going to make you feel good. So all that stuff is coming out, and we just got to continue to educate and advocate and share one voice and share stories.
And Ryan, before we let you go, you had mentioned earlier how, you know, some nights you'd play 5 minutes or maybe 2 minutes, but I would like you to take me back to April 4th, 2004. I'm not sure if you remember. It was the last game of the regular season in the 2003-2004 season. You were a member of Chicago against the Dallas Stars.
I do remember that game. That was my last game. I think Chicago knew it was going to be my last game. They ended up playing me 16 minutes that game.
What? Yeah, 16.
Going for it.
Yeah, two goals. What? A power play goal.
Are you kidding me?
I kid you not.
What a
game. I remember coming off the bench one shift, and I was playing so much. I looked at the coach, and I was like, God, I can't go out here. Give me a break, man.
Was Brian Sutter?
Know, these guys played 27 minutes. It just boggles my mind.
Was Brian Sutter the coach there?
Brian Sutter was, yeah. So the year before that, Strutt, you were gone, I think, were you there then?
I think I might have been there for that one.
Yeah.
Right before the lockout.
Yeah, right before the lockout, yeah. Right. Yeah. So the year before that, you were there as well.
Yeah. Right, right.
And that's when I played 22 games, and I thought Brian Sutter was going to get fired, but he didn't. Mike Smith got fired,
yeah.
And Brian Sutter coached the next year. So I didn't think I was going to play at all the following year. For some reason, he ended up playing me a shit ton.
Yeah, I remember
more games.
Well, you know, it's fun. Actually, I'm looking up the stats from that game, Ryan. You had two goals, 2 points, were plus one, had the power play marker.
Oh, yeah.
And you mentioned you played 15-58. Strutty, as a defenseman, only played 15-53 that night. So you did outplay him.
I beat him in ice time for once. Well, right on.
Well, it's funny. I remember when Brian Sutter was our coach, Bushy, he'd always walk into the room and he'd be looking at us and he'd go, "We need you tonight, Bush. Come on, Bush. We need you, Bush." And that's all we'd say. He wouldn't tell him what to do or how to do it. Just like, "We need you tonight, Bush." Do you remember that, buddy? He'd do it. He'd say it every single time. That was his pump up speech. "We need you, Strutty. Strutty, we need you tonight, Strutty."
He was a beauty.
Well, Bushy, I really appreciate, man. It's great catching up with you and sharing everything that's happened during your career and post career. And you're welcome for all those easy backdoor tap ins I gave you when we played together.
Yeah, practice. That's right.
Well, Ryan, thanks for this. We really appreciate it. Continued success with yourself and Athletes for Care and everything else. Thanks for your time.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much.